Item K, we welcome Judge Lori Earl, co-chair of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, with the co-chair Zlatko Theodorovich. Also, we welcome Jake Chatters, CEO of Placer, as well as Stephen Chang.
Thank you, Chief. The Budget Advisory Committee presents to you today several proposed revisions to the WAFA model that have been developed by our Funding Methodology Subcommittee and approved unanimously by our full committee. As you may recall, when the Judicial Council first approved the use of the new funding model, you adopted our recommendation that the RAS Cluster 1 courts be excluded from having their historical base allocations reallocated under WAFM in the first year. We made that recommendation because we recognized that the model needed further refinement before including our smallest courts. Since beginning last August, the Funding Methodology Subcommittee recruited the assistance of our colleagues from some of these small courts, including Judge Dean Stout and CEO Tammy Grimm from Inyo and CEO Lee Kirby from Sierra. And we turned our attention to the application of WAFM upon the Cluster 1 courts. That work culminated with the first six recommendations on the report today, which I will introduce these recommendations, and then Jake and Zlatko will provide specific details. Recommendations 1 and 2 relate to the determination of a court's funding need. In recommendation number 1, we propose that rather than using the most recent one-year BLS data as an adjuster on salary, that an average of the three most recent years be used. We present this recommendation because we recognize that there could be significant cost of labor changes from year to year, and that applying a three-year average would smooth out those changes and allow courts time to adjust to either growth or decline in cost of labor. This recommendation would apply to all 58 trial courts. Recommendation number 2 establishes a per FTE dollar allotment floor for courts with fewer than 50 FTEs. The floor is the median BLS adjusted average FTE dollar allotment of all courts with a need of fewer than 50 FTEs. Application of the floor occurs when a court's average BLS adjusted FTE dollar allotment is lower than that median. During our work, we found that some courts' FTE dollar allotment was unreasonably low, making it almost impossible for them to afford necessary staff. We feel that establishing a per FTE dollar allotment floor for courts with fewer than 50 employees would effectively address the ability of these courts to hire and retain necessary staff. Recommendations 3, 4, and 5 relate to a court's allocation. The recommendations provide for the establishment of both an absolute funding floor of $750,000 and a graduated funding floor to slightly larger courts. In bringing this recommendation, we acknowledge that there is a minimum level of funding necessary for a court to be able to perform its services to the public. Through the work of Jake Chatters and Debbie Norrie and a number of our colleagues from our state's smallest courts, we've identified where those minimum funding levels should be. If you approve this recommendation, the result will be that any trial court whose allocation would fall below those levels would be guaranteed funding at a minimum level, which of course means that funding of their shortfall would be accomplished by reducing the allocations of those courts that do not qualify for these funding floor levels. Should you approve recommendations 1 through 5, we would then ask you to approve our 6th recommendation, which would in effect include Cluster 1 courts in reallocations under WAFM beginning in the next fiscal year, 2014-2015. So I will turn it over to Jake and Zlatko to discuss the specifics of these recommendations, and we'll address recommendation number 7 when they are done.
Thank you, Chief Justice and members of the Council. I apologize for the lack of my voice here today. So I don't have a whole lot to add, actually, to what Judge Earl has had to say on the recommendations, except Stephen, if we can go down to recommendation 4. So three. Recommendation number 3 establishes a minimum floor, and I wanted to talk a little bit about how we identified that amount. So again, the charge here was to determine whether there were ways to modify the WAFM model to bring the smallest courts into the model and be able to allocate them along with the rest of us. a group of five courts and I, so it was Amador, Trinity, Plumas, Sierra, and MODOC. We met on the phone. They volunteered to open up their general ledger accounts. We looked through those to try and identify what it would take to open up a brand new court in the state of California. So theoretically speaking, we have a new county. It's a rural county. They don't have any filings, but on that first day, what does it need to look like in terms of staffing so they can accept that first filing and have that first hearing? And the idea there is that at some level, you get so small the workload isn't enough to drive to justify the amount. You have to be there. You have to be open. And that first filing isn't going to exist until it exists. And so we walked through what it would be necessary on a staffing side. And then separately, looked at their operating costs in the smallest courts, those five courts. They did a lot of work. Really appreciate their support and identifying, taking out one-time costs and special costs and saying, here's what it really looks like to open their court. And interestingly, in the materials, they went out about that one method. We also used it based on what was already in the Waffle model for operating expenses, and those numbers were almost the same, which was a nice validation for us. So looking at that staffing model along with this operating expense, we came to $750,000. A little less, we rounded up just because we can't accommodate everything. And that creates an absolute floor. And that only impacts the very, very smallest of our courts. And that's what the intent there was on that recommendation. So the next recommendation is graduated floor is that, well, let's say you suddenly have $751,000 of need. Well, that doesn't mean that workload all of a sudden is now 100% of what you need. There's still some lack of economies of scale at that size. So we did develop this graduated floor concept that grows up to a point, and if you're curious about where that dividing line hits, it actually hits at the point where courts that have the minimum number of judgeships, which is 2.4, right, I think, there's actually a dividing line there, and so we use that as sort of the top of where that floor would start to impact. So that's what that is dealing with. And then the last bullet is that when we did run this model, there were a couple of courts that would have received a very large increase if they received this graduated floor. It was a two-digit number in terms of percent, and it was rather large. And so the general feeling was, while we are all struggling, it didn't seem appropriate that somebody might receive that much of an increase in a year when everyone else is receiving potentially a decrease. And so that cap is applied that the court can receive no more than, based on the floor being applied, no more than 10% of their prior year's allocation. And there are some nuances to that recommendation.
I'm sorry, who said that?
I did.
You're moving approval of?
All these recommendations.
Okay. One through seven.
One through six.
We haven't
talked about seven.
One through six.
Okay. Well, wait a minute.
Judge Elias moved.
So Judge Elias moved, Judge Stout seconds, but Judge Rosenberg, go ahead.
I have a question. With regard to the floors and the caps, to me, it seems artificial and somewhat arbitrary, less arbitrary, more artificial. We're becoming the tax code here. It's getting more and more complicated. The theory was, what would it cost to open a new court? We're not going to open a new court. And so this is, the whole structure of the floor is based on a theory that makes no sense. I just don't see why we're making these adjustments and fiddling with these numbers in what I consider to be an arbitrary way. Plus, the cap part seems arbitrary as well.
So if I may, Judge, to answer the first portion of that, one of the challenges of all, we looked at this to say, what would it take to open up a brand new court? The reality is that same concept impacts primarily Alpine, MODOC, and Sierra County. And so we did have a lot of discussion with Lee Kirby in Sierra County about, well, would this amount of money be enough to open that court? And I don't know if we can pull it fast enough, but the amount of need that, that the Walker model initially indicates for the Sierra court is pretty low. $200,000 or $300,000, if I remember right. And that really isn't enough for that court to operate. She did a very good job of articulating what it's like in Sierra court right now, where they have four staff total. And very often she, as the court executive, is in the courtroom acting as the court clerk because people come in sick. And so while it does seem a little arbitrary or a scenario that will never happen, we're not going to have a new county, it does impact those smallest counties and how they have to operate every day. We wanted to make sure we weren't looking at, well, what does it take to operate Sierra Court, MODOC Court, or Alpine? But it seems like it could apply to all three of them, and so it was done in that regard to try and be able to apply to them, because yes, we probably will never have a new county, but it would apply to those three small schools.
Judge McCabe, then David Yamasaki, and then Judge Ellsworth.
Thank you, Chief. I was a member of the original funding methodology committee that came up with WAFM, and it originally was composed of eight judges, eight CEOs, and then it kind of grew, I don't know if by invitation or party crashers, but they were all welcome. And I will note to you that there was tension because there was a parochial view from various courts. And it was broken, and I'll give credit to Jack Clark, former CEO of Los Angeles, who actually quite well articulated what everybody was thinking, and that is we have to come up with a floor because the small courts are nervous about talk about regionalization. And that this is our guarantee to the citizens of every county in California that there is going to be a courthouse and justice in your court and in your county. And that, quite frankly, it floored us. I remember when we came up and he drew the diagram. And it's hard to argue with that. How do you argue with that? So we knew the concept was one that was unanimously accepted, embraced by everybody. There were discussions of caps, and we knew that that was going to come. Is it artificial? Well, I mean, sure, you can. I think you can argue that. But the bigger picture is that this is the judiciary's guarantee to every citizen, every county of this state. We're going to have a courthouse there for you. And maybe it meant even more coming from Los Angeles, CEO of Los Angeles, making
not
that statement.
Anymore. We took Sherry Carter.
I don't want
he was then. He was then. So you poachers. So that I think is I bring this historical notation to your view in the context that it resonates. It resonated with us then. I hope it resonates now. As I was looking through this, you know, the basic numbers are, and it was noted, that some of the smaller courts are going to have a benefit by having a floor, even though the larger courts aren't going to enjoy that funding that is closer to optimal. But that's the price we live in, living in a society that's, right, free. And so I think this is a good thing. I support the motion, and I would urge you to support the motion.
Thank you. David Yamasaki, then Judge Ellsworth, and then Judge Stout.
Thank you, Chief. You know, the few moments that we heard from Jake in his explanation of how we landed on these four funding levels for these courts really was just a fraction of all that we went through in coming to this conclusion. We assembled experts in our field to evaluate what it takes to run a court. And it's not a floor just because we feel that that's a number that sounds good. There was a great deal of analysis of what a court needs and the amount of money that these courts would otherwise receive would not enable them to actually function with any great success. So the analysis was extensive. The conclusions were unanimous among our group in terms of what that floor should be. And I think all of us could rest assured that the decision that was made was based on sound judgment. And, you know, the other thing that I would add right now is this is really a proud time for this Judicial Council. Earlier we decided that we needed to give some additional resources to another court that was probably one of the worst conditioned financially to even function, and we voted to support an allocation of $130,000. Today, right now, we're talking about setting a base for courts to function in our state. It's not something I've been on the council for, this is my third year. This is not something that I can say has happened with routine, but we have really made an enormous change in what we're doing to the judicial branch of California. We're doing it from within. And, you know, I would urge you to support the motion that has been made and seconded, and I would certainly vote for it if I were able to.
Thank you, David. Judge Ellsworth and Judge Stout.
Very briefly, because I this will be my last comments. I have to catch a plane immediately thereafter. And so I would say, first of all, I would vote for it if you vote in the next 2 minutes.
Indeed.
But I would like to say that... you know, this isn't an exact science. Everything could be considered artificial, but sometimes you just have to do the right thing. And it's about doing the right thing. And I want to thank those, Lori Earle, you and your extreme leadership in this area, and your whole team and all of those that participated, was just do the right thing here. And I would strenuously urge all of us to vote to approve this.
Thank you.
I'm hoping the Highway Patrol can help get Judge Ellsworth to the airport, and I can take a couple minutes to say some thank yous. I do want to appreciate everyone's comments and concerns, and particularly Judge McCabe and Mr. Yamasaki's, I think, very eloquent statements that I certainly endorse. I want to go back, though, and thank Judge Earle and the Funding Methodology Group, the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, and this council for recognizing. Thank you. Best wishes. We'll see you in Idaho. For recognizing what's been referred to as the anomaly when the WAFA model adopted last July was applied to small rural courts, or what we call a Cluster 1 courts, but not only recognizing that anomaly, but I want to thank you for doing something about it and exempting the Cluster 1 courts and forming what we're calling the Small Court Adjustment Subcommittee. I think that's huge in and of itself, and I don't want to lose sight of that history. And I really want to also thank Mr. Chatters and his co-chair, Ms. Norrie, CEO from Plumas, for their work on that subcommittee. Mr. Chatters is brilliant, and I thank you so much for your leadership and the skills that you brought forward here. And I also want to recognize LOTCO and Stephen and your staff. They were constantly getting data, running numbers, applying formulas, and all under the watchful eye of Judge Earle, who stayed involved in this process. And Judge Rosenberg, I can echo that it was Judge Earle who was constantly advocating that we have to stay true to the integrity of WAFA. We have to maintain as best we can the integrity of the methodology. And I think the committee strove to do that, recognizing that largely because of the economy of scale and how heavily the WAFA model is weighted on filings, that we had to adopt a need-based approach to small rural courts to a certain degree. And I want to also recognize my CEO, Tammy Grimm, to not only help me understand the math, but I think was very creative in moving the subcommittee off-center and suggesting a formula to compute the adjusted allocations using the graduated floor, and Judge Tweed from Glenn County, and also Judge Laura Masanuga-Siskiyou, who I think was tireless in her advocacy for the Cluster 1 courts. And I certainly, we recognize that the adjustments here, the funding's coming out of the same pie. It is coming from other courts, and I'm very grateful to Mary Beth Todd, Mr. Yamasaki, and the other court leadership who've seen the need and the justification for these adjustments, recognizing it's coming out of their pockets. They recognize, I think, that one size doesn't fit all, and that a methodology that's weighted heavily on filings, as it should be, and it does require adjustments when applied to small courts, and recognizing the huge issues, frankly, of economy of scale that we deal with at being so small severely limits our ability to, so to speak, share, spread out the reductions and the suffering. And to a certain degree, maybe in a certain sense, the magnitude of suffering could arguably be greater. And I'm grateful they recognize the need for the minimum in graduated form. Again, trying to maintain the integrity of the workload-based allocation model. Is it perfect? No. Is there some arbitrary nature? Yes, I would certainly agree. Is it what I would ideally want to see for the Cluster 1 courts? No. But I strongly support each of the first six recommendations. I don't want anybody to think that we actually identified the cause of the anomaly. I think that may be escaping the math somewhere. But the recommendations go a long way toward addressing the inequities. I think it gives peace of mind to small court CEOs and PJs, especially given filing fluctuations when they try to budget. It gives them that knowledge and that certainty of a certain baseline level. And I think what's really important here is the recommendations keep all 58 trial courts within WAFL. And I think, especially as we continue our discussions with the governor and the legislature about reinvesting in the judicial branch, I think we can all agree on how important it is to the branch to have one funding methodology for all 58 courts, and this helps accomplish that. My request would be to ensure that, as mentioned in the report, that this remain a parking lot issue, that it stay on the radar screen of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. I think their reference on page 6 of the report basically indicating it's important that the Advisory Committee continue to propose revisions that address the circumstances of the small courts is very important. I would respectfully urge that the Advisory Committee carefully look at how this plays out in 14-15 and make sure that any inequities are addressed in future recommendations, and invite comment from the Cluster 1 courts in the next fiscal year and see how it's working. But again, I thank everyone very much.
Thank you, Judge Stout. Yes, Judge Rosenberg.
Just one final brief comment. This workload-based system received our unanimous support. I certainly support it. I supported the work of Judge Earl and the committee and strongly do so. But understand what we're doing today, if this is approved, is we are moving away from the workload-based system for 8 courts. We are reallocating money, which comes from other courts, frankly. We are reallocating money based not on workload, but on size. And so I think to some extent we are creating another historical anomaly, which we tried to move away from when we went from the historical system to the workload-based system. Believe me, I understand the comments that have been made, particularly by Judge Stout, but I will vote against the motion.
Thank you. Judge Earl?
Well, let's remember that right now the Cluster 1 courts aren't included in WAFM at all. And while to a certain extent Judge Rosenberg is correct that we cannot just rely on workload to be able to provide equity to these smaller courts, we have to provide something else to get them to a point where they can operate their buildings. And that's essentially what this does, is recognize that there are differences when you talk about courts of very small sizes, that they can't rely on economies of scale to get the job done like those of us from larger and medium-sized courts can. So to a certain extent, he's correct. But we also recognize that WAFM alone won't solve the inequity that exists in the smaller courts.
And for a point of clarification, Judge Stout asked about keeping an eye on this, basically. But I understand now that the Trial Court Budget Work Group is a work group, is an advisory committee and not a work group, and that WAFM is still in many instances its infancy. you'll always be monitoring this and looking for anomalies and reporting back to the council adjustments or recommendations based on data or trends or outcomes.
Maybe this would be a good time to introduce Recommendation 7, because that's exactly the issue that we're bringing before you. As you know, the law firm relies heavily upon the work of the what was before called the SB 56 Working Group, now the Judicial Branch Resource Needs Assessment Advisory Committee. And in our work and looking at the workload metrics that underlie WAFM, there was a discussion of the special circumstances cases and whether or not the workload value is accurately collected and reflected in the WAFM. And so the recommendation from the Budget Advisory Committee is that you direct, because we want to work through the council on these issues, that the Resource Needs Advisory Committee study these special circumstances in their next round of workload and work with the court executives to determine how best to gather data to fold that piece of information in to their review. There are many other parking lot issues, some that do fall within the work that the Budget Advisory Committee can do. For example, we'll be looking at a new parking lot issue regarding access and remote locations and remote courthouses. A letter was sent by from the Mendocino Court asking us to look at this. That's within our sort of our ability, but in this case, the workload analysis needs to be done by those who are on the other advisory committee. And so that's the recommendation. So again, this is a evolution, and there's many issues that we have on our parking lot list that will be part of our annual agenda that will come before you.
Thank you, Mary Beth Todd, and then Judge Walsh. And
I just wonder if I can amend my thing to include 7.
Yes, and okay. The seconds, Judge Dowson seconds, Mary Beth Todd.
Okay. With respect to this item, I serve on both the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee and Jabbernacker. The Alice in Wonderland story or something. The Jabbernacker. Jabberwocky, whatever. So it's interesting being on both those committees because there's a lot of overlap and we tend to want to encroach on each other's territory. So with respect to this recommendation, there was a lot of spirited discussion. As far as, you know, how far should the Budget Advisory Committee go in asking the council to direct Jabbernacker? I'm not sure that the recommendation itself describes real well all of that spirited discussion. First, I want to make clear that these are felony special capital death penalty type cases. My concern with this recommendation is I totally support referring the issue to Jabbernacker to look at, but I would recommend we stop short of telling Jabbernacker what to do with the results of their analysis and where they think they should go. There are a lot of different things that come up in these spirited debates. There's complex cases, there's capital cases, there's multiple jury trials. There are a lot of things that people come up and they want added to the model. And first of all, we don't even all report the 20 case types we're currently counting in the detail that we need. And so we're working with SEAC and the courts to at least get us to that point where we're all reporting consistently those 20 case categories. So that's the first thing we're struggling with. So, you know, it's kind of like we've got to walk before we run. The second thing is, this is a funding model. It's not a reimbursement model, and we need to approach it carefully that we're not getting it down to such nitty-gritty detail that we're all seeing big shifts and swings depending on what happened in our court this particular year. I know with the small courts that there was a lot of discussion as we were working on how to approach, how we modify the methodology for them, because we're the tail of the dragon, and so when the dragon moves, maybe they move a little bit up here, but at the end, it's just a lot. So it's we need to approach all of these things cautiously, and I think it's Jabbernacker that is the committee that is tasked with looking at how we analyze the data, how we compile that data into a resource need document, and I would just recommend that we make it clear with this recommendation that we aren't directing Jevernak what to do once they come up with how to collect this data and saying, thou shalt put it into the model, but that they should look at whether it's appropriate and makes sense for the model. And then let them come back to us and tell us how they think that should be implemented.
So Mary Beth, let me ask you, I understand what you're saying. Are you satisfied with this language? It's to study primarily?
Consider the Judge Earl and I
guess I get worried at the end when it says, and when a determination is made, direct the trial courts to start reporting such data. I guess that would be the likely place it would go if Jevernak concludes that, yes, it's important that we collected this detail because this is a case category that has such impact that it, you know, to not count it is undermining the integrity of the model. But if they determine that, you know what, when we start to get into this detail, it's going to open up all of these other case types, and that will start to erode the integrity of the model, and so we think, no, we should stop at this much higher level, then they can come back with that recommendation, and, you know, whether or not we start to collect it or not, I think there are lots of reasons why it's valuable to collect the data, but I mentioned we're already having trouble just with the 20 broadest categories. Mm-hmm. And at some point in time, hopefully we'll all be able to report our data down to this level of detail.
Thank you. David Yamasaki.
Yeah, and like Mary Beth, I serve on a multitude of committees, and this happens to be one of the recommendations that I descended from for two reasons. Number one, by focusing just on the special circumstance cases, it means that it's going to take away from other cases that may be of equal import or may take a significant amount of time. I think we should look at all of the cases, although I know that the work that would be required to do that would be substantial, and I know the resources are limited in this particular office of the AOC. But the other thing that struck me as being problematic is, as I understand it, to just look at special circumstance cases court-wide, it's a three-year venture. So by the time you finish this, you're going to decide, oh, now we need to look at another case type. We're going to be way past, being able to draw conclusions and determine, well, we can't act on this because we have to build another case. My sense is that we should look at all of the case types with greater detail and maybe come out after 3 years with a recommendation on how to go forward. But just to pull out the special circumstance cases, I realize that they take a long time. We have a lot of other cases that take a great amount of time as well. So that's the reason why I had descended from this particular recommendation.
Thank you. Judge Walsh.
Thank you. I was on budget advisory, and I supported this position, unlike my CEO. I guess we still disagree. But the good news is neither of us have a vote today, so it doesn't matter. But I speak just to make one clarification. In the body of this report, it talks about other alternatives, and as David correctly pointed out, we discussed whether other types of cases should be included. And in the report it says, other types of special circumstances cases, such as complex civil cases, et cetera, et cetera. I just want to be clear. In this recommendation, number 7, we use the term special circumstances case deliberately. We mean death penalty cases. We don't mean, as the report seems to mean, all cases that get special. They're just this one here. And we may want to make that clear, since the term of art seems to be lost in translation. We might want to say death penalty cases. That's what we meant, and nothing else. Right.
So it's only death penalty. You're not talking about first degree and special circumstances life cases, only death cases.
Correct. And we understand that how you measure that, well, death penalty when filed, death penalty eventually.
So that really needs to be changed to make it clear.
Chief.
Let me let them confer and then so they hear it.
So can I would suggest to the, would the panel agree that we change it to death penalty cases? That's accurate. we're talking. All right.
From the back of the room. I was just speaking to Judge Earl because I think we chose the broader wording to encompass. There was a request recently from the Superior Court of Alameda regarding homicide. And so the use of special circumstances was a broader term to encompass both death penalty specifically and then this request that just came recently from Alameda that we study homicide.
That's fine, but let me get the order of. So I have Judge O'Malley and then Commissioner Alexander.
So that kind of goes to my next point. I have no problem with this committee studying this aspect, but just know that there are certain cases, death penalty cases, that are handled so differently from county to county. For instance, Los Angeles can handle a death penalty case in a matter of weeks, where there are other counties where it's a matter of years, and it's just because of institutional practices of those judges and how they perform voir dire, how they perform in limines, how many days they're in session, that can prolong these types of cases. Also, the district attorney will notice special circumstances which could qualify as a death penalty case and then choose after a preliminary examination not to pursue death and to continue with LWOP or even 50 to life, whatever the circumstances may be. However, from the interim of filing to the determination not to pursue death, there are a myriad of different things that go on, investigations, meetings, committees, determinations, considering mitigating circumstances presented by defense attorneys to try and get them not to choose death. And again, that might be handled so differently from county to county. So I caution against comparing the number of days that these take, because I think that there are some practices that, frankly, are just a matter of institutional, this is the way we've always done it, even though there are more effective and modern and more efficient ways to handle those cases that some counties choose to ignore as opposed to other counties. For instance, like Los Angeles, who are probably handle the most of them and do them in my opinion, the most efficient manner. So no problem with studying this, but be very wary that if this is going to translate into dollars, that some counties are really going to have to change their ways, because it can be abused, as far as I'm concerned, in just saying, boy, they spent a lot of time and effort on these cases, therefore they should get more money, and that shouldn't equate that way. So just point of interest.
Leah, and then Commissioner.
Thank you. Judge, I completely agree. It's a thorny issue. The Gibbernack, someday I'll get used to that, is one of their goals is to update the workload studies on a regular cycle. At its last meeting, the group agreed in to aspirationally update the models every 5 years or so. So that is coming up, and we agreed that, you know, we certainly can include studying these types of cases as part of that. It is possible, though, that at the end of the analysis, it may not be feasible to come up with a separate case weight for those categories. And as I read the recommendation, and maybe this would address the concerns that Mary Beth is raising as well, it may make more sense if that third from the bottom line where it says necessary to support a study, and instead of having when, that we say if, and that might leave the door open in case we go that route and determine that it's just not feasible to come up with a statewide case weight for that.
Thank you, Leah. Commissioner Alexander.
I just want the special circumstances has different meanings. I think it needs to be clear to Gibbernack what we're requesting them to do. And to follow up with what David Yamasaki said, maybe we could ask them what case types they think they should study and to do a weighted, to come back to us with other things that they think they should study besides just this one thing, and what, and to give a weighted caseload to different things, not just these cases.
Judge Baker.
Now that the panel has had the input from the council, it's starting to sound to me as though recommendation number 7 might be premature. I don't think Jabernet necessarily needs the authority of the council to study this issue. What brings the recommendation before the council is the part, as Mary Beth Todd noted, where we are directing the trial courts to start reporting the data. And I think, having heard all the comments from fellow council members, it's beginning to sound to me as though I think there is an interest in seeing that the study get completed and that Jabernet come back to the council later after having performed that study and then make a recommendation of whether or not to require the trial courts to start providing this data.
Judge Earl.
There's some confusion. The trial court, the funding methodology subcommittee recognized that in order to improve WAFM, it would be helpful if we could have the case type of death penalty study, special circumstance homicide cases, to as Leah said, to include homicide cases. We make no comments on what else they should study, that this should be studied to the exclusion of other things. It is just our input to the council that we think it would be helpful and important if this case type was studied. But we certainly don't pretend to somehow dictate what other case types they should study, when they should do that. We just wanted them to have our feedback and knew that the avenue to do that was to come for you.
All right, so this is not to the exclusion of any other case types. No. Justice Miller.
Well, and I appreciate you say that, because that's how the process is supposed to work, one advisory committee can't direct another advisory committee to do something if they have to come through the internal committee or they have to come to the council. So I appreciate that last part as to what you're suggesting, that they be directed to study. And I do think we have to approve that. It has to, because their annual agenda would need to be amended, and that's the process we're going through. So I appreciate you coming through this dimension.
And Judge O'Malley makes a good point. The real hard work will be Jabernet on this issue, not us.
So Leah, then, are you asking there be a friendly amendment and change the word from when to if?
I would, yes.
Will you accept that?
Yes.
I shouldn't be...
Judge Alliance.
Yes.
Well, is there also a clarification on special circumstance?
I change that too.
Shouldn't it just be homicide, because that's the only way a special circumstance attaches?
Well, but it was only death penalty.
Yeah, but then there's something.
But special circumstance is not only death penalty. That's why it's not clear.
Well, that's why special circumstance is too loose a phrase. What we had in mind was, if you could do it, we don't know if it's doable. But if you could do it, we know that once, when death is on the table, it takes a lot more time than if it's LWOP or any number of other things. We said, and of course we're pushing to at least look at those where death is on the table. And for how long it's on the table, whether that matters, we don't know. But it's death, not LWOP. So.
So are you?
I should say death penalty.
Death penalty.
Right, they wanted to study homicide.
They wanted to study the death penalty.
We were pressed to do a lot of other things, like homicide.
Okay.
The recommendation was limited to death penalty.
No comment. Taste of the discussion we
had. So, number 7, then, I don't know that I'm correct on this, but special circumstance needs to be amended to death penalty cases.
Correct. That's what I think.
Well, I'm not making.
Well, that's
death eligible.
Our discussion was, look, we don't know at what, how to weigh, that's their expertise. And they may say, you know what, because it's so iffy, is it when it's filed, is it when a jury gets it, that's up to them. it just courts want a death penalty out there. But
either way,
I don't know how else to describe it. But if it's filed as a death case and it's taken off the table in the first month, that, they're going to have to look at that. If death is later,
Jim Fox.
I think I might be able to speak with some authority.
Yeah.
pursued. And frankly, we would always file a special circumstance. And I think most DAs do. Although, frankly, there are significant differences between counties. Yeah. I told Judge Brandlin, in San Francisco, you will never have a death penalty case. You may have special trials, but death penalty would never be pursued. Most prosecutors would file with the special circumstance, would proceed either through the preliminary hearing or through the grand jury proceeding, and then do further investigation. But at some point, and hopefully most of the prosecutors have a big financial picture, if we decide we are not going to seek it, or that we don't believe that we would ultimately be able to obtain it, we would take it out of death penalty status sooner rather than later, because the defense attorneys are reaping 987 funds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you stop that stream of money going out, because ultimately it's not going to be a death penalty case anymore.
Right. So Judge Brandlin, how about L.A.?
I oversee all the death penalty cases in Los Angeles County. There's 175 death-eligible cases that are currently open. My recommendation is as a friendly amendment, you have it read, study special circumstance, death-eligible cases.
There you go.
Because it's not normally until after the preliminary hearing that the DA's office even evaluates whether or not they're going to be seeking death. But you've got a lot of other things in between, including mitigation, experts, and investigators, and everything else that's now in the mix, which is very expensive. So that's my recommendation.
Judge Elias, will you accept that friendly amendment?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, so there's two friendly amendments. Special circumstance now reads special circumstance slash death eligible, and the when has been changed to if. There's also the understanding that this is not to the exclusion. Gibranek is to study this if this is approved by council, but not to the exclusion of anything else that Gibranek may think contributes to the WAFM formula. As amended, and seeing heads nodding, I don't see any further hands.
1 through 7?
1 through 7 is on the table, as amended with Judge Elias making the motion, Judge Stout seconding. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Opposed, no.
Thank you. The recommendations pass. I too want to join how I am grateful for the hard work. Well, first of all, initially that went into WAFM for all of those here who participated under Judge Earl and Zlatko's leadership, and how you continue to refine it and continue to stay the course to try to be as eligible to, as true to WAFM, because WAFM really is the ultimate great equalizer for all of the trial courts going forward. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And Leah, as you saw, came up chief at the end there.
Yes.
She's been invaluable in the work that we do together with, I'll say, now it's the Jabberknack, and our work. We are working together, and we have many meetings, and we're going to have one shortly where we're discussing together the kinds of work we're doing. But Leah and Kristen and others have been helpful, so we're all working together.
Thank you. And those are all the names we've always heard. Yeah. Thank you. Thank
chief.
You.
But is it Jibberknack, Jabberknack, or Jabberknack?
I think I think the J is silent.
That's...
Justice Hall?
Yes, that was going to be my last comment, and I was wondering if the committee could study whether or not we can come up with a different acronym than Jabberknack.
Do we have to amend the rules if we change it?
Yes, because we just voted on this.